master turned away again and walked across the laboratory, past benches where she and Lannery had practiced alchemies and manipulation. As she returned with a new bottle of wine, Lannery had one more question to ask. Master, where did the information about Dale, the Stargazers, and their device come from? Dan Powell nodded as if affirming something to herself. It's Kalimar you need to visit. Yes, Lannery said. Kalimar. She held up her glass for one more drink. On her way to Kalimar, Lannery had time to reflect on what she had done. Your balance is unsettled, Master Dan Powell had said, and Lannery could not disagree with the master. Darkness haunted her dreams, and sometimes she found herself dreaming of Bogan. All that troubled her, yet this journey was not yet done. When it was over, soon, she was confident that she was strong enough to correct the unbalance herself. She was surprised to find herself lonely. Ironholgs remained at Aniel Kesh, being repaired by a young journeyer whose talent was mechanics. And without Tree here, her cabin felt too large, her ship too silent. She spoke to herself again, but was sad that there was no reply. Tree's prognosis was good, she had been told. She held on to the delight she felt at this fact. She thought perhaps she had made a friend. A group of journeyers led by Master Kinnaid had searched for Dale's body for some time, but it was never found. Creatures, Lannery thought. There could be anything down there. There are depths. She sat staring at her experiment for some time. It was shriveled and denuded, and it should have been blasted into space. Yet she could not rid herself of it. Darkness danced around the petrified flesh, and Lannery tried several times to find life still within it. At first it was simply dead. But then, half a day out from Kalimar, her force senses perceived a speck of flesh that pulsed with life once more. Given time, she would relearn the alchemy of flesh. Its draw was too great to ignore. And she was strong. On Kalimar, there was nothing to find. Kara's high apartment was abandoned. The damage caused by the battle she and Tree had fought with the fat woman's sentry droids had been repaired. The secret room Lannery had discovered was clean and empty, now opened up as part of the apartment. Everything personal was gone. Kara had left her apartments for the first time in 13 years, and they should have been desirable real estate. And yet no one had chosen to rent it. There was something dark about that space. Any inquiries she made as to Kara's location were met with a blank wall. Most claimed not to have heard of her. The several times Lannery used a subtle force trick to read her associates' minds, she found confused images of Kara as friend and threat, but no indication of where she was now. They had all known her, and they were lying about that. But when it came to her whereabouts, they told the truth. Kara had vanished. With her, so the militia Captain Loris told Lannery, had gone several other high-profile members of the Rahol Yon community. One day they were there, the next, not. Their homes were abandoned, sometimes still filled with personal possessions. Their business interests were left without directors. There was never any trace. Maybe you're better off without them, Lannery suggested.
And why would you say that?
Loris asked her. Because they weren't what they seemed. They were darker. They had their sights elsewhere, and when it suited them, they fed information to the Jedi. Brought me here. Made my brother and his cronies speed up their plans. I think perhaps Kara and her like are the real Stargazers. She left Kalimar the same day that she arrived, sensing that Loris was glad to see her go. And she was glad to leave. She thought of Ironholgs being repaired. There were the machines, and there were the masters. The tools that function and react, and the programmers who use them for their own ends. She suspected that Dale had been a machine, a tool, and that Kara and her missing comrades were the real masters. Perhaps Dale had been moving too slowly with his schemes, and his masters had wanted to encourage him to speed up. And what better way than to set the Jedi on his trail? Lannery did not like the feeling of being used, and yet it was something that haunted her. But now Tython was her destination once more. Her parents awaited, and it was time for their daughter to come home. After the second remembrance service for Dale, she would stay for a while. She would wander the grassy plains around Bodhi Temple alone, perhaps swim in the river, and watch the weave birds making nests. And when darkness fell, she would lie back and contemplate Ashlaw and Bogan, and her place of balance between them. This is January Lavoie. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Dawn of the Jedi, Into the Void, by Tim Lebon. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Dawn of the Jedi, Into the Void, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2013. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio presentation. All rights reserved. And now, Eruption by John Ostrander. Hawk Ryo drifted in and out the shadows, a shadow himself. The moon world Zarist was located far from the sun, and most of the available light was reflected off the gas giant Obri, around which the moon orbited. Kanan was typically bustling with activity, but the workers' town was now deserted. Like all the surface towns on Zarist, Kanan was located near an active volcano for its much-needed warmth, despite the risk of occasional eruptions. The authorities usually predicted the eruptions in time and evacuated the threatened areas, just as they had recently done with Kanan. No one was left in the town except Hawk. In theory. In reality, the Jedi Ranger spotted two figures atop the flat-roofed building less than a kilometer away. Only 5 stories high, it was still the tallest building in the area. They were Twi'leks, like himself, and armed.